From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
Well, as we all know, we're living through one of the most anxious periods any of us can remember. Whether facing issues as public as the pandemic or political upheaval, or as personal as having kids at home or fighting the urge to reach for the wine bottle every night, we're just feeling overwhelmed and out of control. But in his timely new book, Judson Brewer explains how to uproot anxiety at its source using brain-based techniques and small hacks accessible to anyone. Dr. Judson Brewer is a psychiatrist and neuroscientist and associate professor at the Brown University School of Public Health. His extensive research into anxiety and the addictive behaviors it drives spans two decades. He is joining us to discuss his new book called Unwinding Anxiety. New science shows how to break the cycles of worry and fear to heal your mind. Dr. Judson Brewer, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thanks for having me.
Anxiety. Wow. It's the topic of the year, isn't it? During the pandemic, those who have experienced anxiety who have never before experienced anxiety, I mean, what are the numbers?
The numbers are staggering, unfortunately. I think we've seen a 250% increase in psychological distress over the last year. We saw 287% increase in screening positive for anxiety disorders. So it's, you know, even BC, before COVID-19, there was a lot of anxiety, but it has spiked over the last year.
Anxiety, well, there's a point that you make that is curiosity and kindness are the neurological antithesis to anxiety. And I thought about when I feel anxious, I'm in this very self-absorbed mode, not to say that, you know, those who suffer anxiety are self-absorbed, but it forces us very much inward. And when we turn it outward and we, you know, during the pandemic, it's helped to focus on what others are experiencing. And this is something, this is a great point that you make. Can you talk about how to get to that point?
I'd be happy to. And actually, that's the third of three steps. So if we start at the beginning, the first step is just helping ourselves understand how our own minds work. You know, a lot of my patients, I would say almost all of my patients come into my office not knowing how their own minds work in terms of what drives anxiety, what drives other compensatory habits. As an example, I had a patient who came in for anxiety and I pulled out a piece of paper and mapped out his habit loops with him. You know, what was the trigger? What was the behavior? And what was the reward or the result? This is how our brains work to, you know, to survive. He found that, anxiety was driving him to stress eat, and that stress eating, well, he went home to explore what was he getting from stress eating. And in fact, he came back 2 weeks later and he had lost 14 pounds. So this is with us just focusing on mapping out how his anxiety habit loops are formed. So that highlights the first step, which is anybody can map out, you know, what's the trigger, what's the behavior, what's the result. And in fact, we put together a free habit mapper, which is, I think it's on mapmyhabit.com, where people can download a PDF and just map out their habits. That's the first step. The second step is helping our brains see just how rewarding or unrewarding the behavior is. So with this patient, it was, you know, he went home, he realized that the stress eating wasn't actually fixing the cause of his stress. And in fact, it was making him more stressed because he was very overweight and needed to lose weight. So he just stopped doing that, you know, where he said it was pretty effortless because he just became less excited or less enchanted with that, that compensatory mechanism. So that's the second step, is helping our brain see just how unrewarding, whether it's worrying, you know, does the worry to keep my family safe? Does it fix the problem that I'm worrying about? The answer generally is no. And as we start to see that the worrying is not helping and might be just making us more anxious, it helps us become disenchanted. Oh, you know, that worrying is not really doing what I thought it was doing. It might make me feel like I'm doing something. You know, it's like parents worrying about their teenage kids, you know, being safe. you know, when they're out on the weekends. Well, it's their worrying probably isn't keeping their kids safe, but at least it's giving them something to occupy their time while they're waiting to hear the garage door open or the doorknob, you know, to the front door of the house open. So that piece is really critical. And then the third step, I think of this as finding the BBO, the bigger, better offer, is related to what you were talking about. So anxiety and worry makes us feel closed and contracted. So even, you know, you were talking about self-absorbed. We can even just think about this on a physical perspective. Like it feels closed because our bodies, you know, think of them as our bodies are feel like they're in fight or flight mode. They're trying to protect themselves, right? So our bodies close down to protect our vital organs. Right? We make ourselves as small a target as possible from a evolutionary perspective. But really, you know, when we're worried, there tends not to be danger. It's just this, you know, trying to solve a problem or trying to figure something out or just worrying to do something and make us feel like we're in control. So what we can do is find something that helps open us up because you can't be closed and open at the same time. And I find that, you know, two flavors of opening that anybody can access are curiosity and kindness, right? Just remembering what it's like when somebody was kind to us already opens us up a little bit. Getting curious about what it feels like to be worried. You know, where do I feel it in my body? Is it more on the right side or the left side? We can do simple things to start to just get curious about what that anxiety feels like itself. And both of those will open us up.
Well, you know, that's really fascinating. And I don't want to jump to the BBO one because I love the way that you describe it as a BBO, the bigger, better offer. I want to go back to this idea of, you know, knowing that something isn't going to be as rewarding as it is. And you know, whether it's my wife stressing about the kids or me not going for a run, but I know I should go for a run, or eating that burger and fries and dessert and then, you know, drinking a glass of wine all right before bed. Why do we struggle back and forth when we, many times we often know that these things are not good for us or gonna send us into a cycle of anxiety or, you know, self-evaluation? Why do we keep going back to those? Help me understand that.
Yeah, there are a couple of reasons for that. One is that, you know, our thinking brains don't hold a candle to our feeling bodies. So urges to do behaviors come from the body, you know, not our thinking brains. If our thinking brains were that strong, we could just think our way out of, you know, overeating, of anxiety, of binge watching Netflix, of smoking, whatever, right? So really it comes down to what drives the process. And once we can see that that process is kind of driven, the second piece to know here is that our brains are going to try to fix a problem as quickly as possible. They're not going to look down the road. They're going to say, hey, make this go away immediately. And so, you know, we turn to whatever's close to us. We've seen over the last year, people are drinking alcohol more. They turn to the liquor cabinet. There's the quarantine 15 where people are turning to the refrigerator. You know, there's Netflix has done extremely well, you know, because people are binge watching Netflix. So it's really we're looking for these quick fixes that are actually, they're quick, but they actually make more problems than they solve because they provide a temporary relief, but they don't solve the problem and can provide or create more habits on top of our already challenging anxiety and worry.
So where you're really analyzing this is this sense of immediacy and that gut need versus the intellectual knowledge. And I guess that's where you get to this BBO, this bigger, better offer. And we used to play this game as kids where we'd actually try to trade up in the neighborhood for different things and see who could, by the end of a day or a week, have the best or biggest thing. And how do we do that? How do we do that with, you know, whether it's, I saw you did research on smoking mm-hmm. or eating. How do we trade up?
Well, the interesting thing here is the most sustainable, bigger, better offer is something that comes intrinsically. So something that we don't have to reach for or buy or download. So, you know, as compared to alcohol or food or our phones, you know, Cornel West calls our phones the weapons of mass distraction. You know? So instead of reaching to these external things, we check to see what's internal. And the key is finding a BBO that actually helps us open rather than get more closed down, you know, to try to get, you know, for example, excitement. If we're going and watching exciting things or looking for new experiences, that excitement can actually be driven itself in the same habit forming process that all these other things are. So it's really about finding internally based behaviors that help open us up. And this is where kindness and curiosity are, I would say, superpowers in this respect.
I love that. If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, our guest is Dr. Judson Brewer, aka Dr. Judd. He is a psychiatrist and neuroscientist and associate professor at Brown University School of Public Health. His new book is Unwinding Anxiety: New Science Shows How to Break the Cycles of Worry and Fear to Heal Your Mind. And I just love the title, first of all, Unwinding Anxiety, because in my mind, people who suffer from, whether it's, actually diagnosed anxiety disorder, or if it's chronic worrying, that word unwinding, to know that we can unwind. I am a chronic worrier. I know, and I've said it to myself, something that you've said in this interview already, which is, how much does your worry keep your kids safe? And the answer is not at all. But there's a part of my irrational mind that says, well, if I think through all the things that could possibly happen, I won't be surprised if one of these things happen. And you're laughing, and because it must be what a lot of worriers say.
Yes, yes, it is. And even if we think through all the possible things that could happen, it doesn't mean that we can prevent or make those things not happen. So it just makes us, one, and it could be one of the million things that we think of. So even if that one of a million things does happen, we haven't actually solved any problems. We've just know, oh, I saw that coming. Great.
That's so funny. You know, when my kids were in college and we talk on Monday and they'd say, oh yeah, we went up to Vermont to go skiing. And I'm thinking narrow, windy roads. And I would say to them, oh, I'm so glad that you didn't tell me beforehand that you were going to Vermont to go skiing, so I didn't have to worry. And that is so irrational. But just knowing the rational part of thinking doesn't really help me. How am I going to launch myself out of worry? Just have my kids never tell me anything that they're doing?
Well, I would say, again, it really starts with knowing how our own minds work, right? Yeah. And seeing, so mapping out, mapping out a worry habit loop around our kids, for example, saying, oh, if my kids are going to do something which is supposed to be fun, but has a 1% chance of being dangerous or less, right? Is my mind going to go to that 1%? Oh, they're on roads, they're driving a car, so we could think of this as, if our brains really took this to an extreme, we wouldn't leave our houses. And in fact, we'd look to see how unsafe our houses might be. Oh no, what if there's like a gas leak or whatever? So it's really about mapping out these habit loops first, right? What's the trigger? What's the behavior? What's the result? And then the second piece is around asking ourselves, well, what did I get from that when I worried about my kids last time, just as an example, right? Did that actually keep them safe? Did that make me feel better? If I see that it's not actually solving a problem, not keeping my family safe, what's the alternative? What's the bigger, better offer? And this is where we can give our brains something to compare that to. Okay, go ahead and worry. Have at it. Worry all you want. Just feel what that feels like. See what it gets you, basically. And then compare this to the bigger, better offer. Well, what's it like to be curious about what that worry feels like right now in this moment? What's it feel like to step out of that worry habit loop? I've never had a patient come into my clinic and say, Doc, I need to worry more. Can you help me with that?
Well, that's actually what now I'm wondering, because of all this discussion of worry, and I see in your notes here, worry and anxiety is contagious. Am I becoming more worrisome and
yes.
Help me.
Yeah, so especially with social media, we can go on social media where our survival brains are saying, hey, I need information to keep me safe. And a lot of us have the habit of going on social media to check our, check for news that we get from people we follow or whatever. But in fact, in that platform, in these social media platforms, we can spread, you know, emotion. It's called social contagion. And that, you know, you can't wear a mask or you know, just socially distance to prevent that from happening. Somebody can sneeze on your brain from anywhere in the world.
Best quote of an interview in a long time. Your brain can be sneezed on from anywhere in the world. And with a year just now with COVID and the U.S. shutting down the whole country and the world, we've had a lot of sneezing across the international digital spectrum. And what have you seen? Why did you want to publish this book now? Tell us what's going on.
Yes, I'd started writing this book before the pandemic, actually, December 2019, and I had no idea what was coming. None of us did. So serendipity really took over from there. And, you know, it started from my own anxiety. You know, I had anxiety in college. I didn't know it. It was showing up physically. I got panic attacks during residency. And during my early career in psychiatry, I was struggling to help my patients with anxiety. You know, there's this term in medicine called number needed to treat, how many people you need to treat with a certain therapy before one person benefits. For medications, that's 5.15. So I was basically playing the medication lottery, you know, where I was getting a 20% hit rate in helping my patients with anxiety. So I was getting anxious. I couldn't help my patients with anxiety. And I came across this research from the 80s that was overlooked about the same time that a new class of medications called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors was coming out. This guy, Thomas Borkovec at Penn State, was suggesting that anxiety and worry could be driven in a negatively reinforced process, basically like any other habit. My lab had studied habits. I was thinking, oh, wow, can we bring what we were developing, you know, mindfulness, even app-based mindfulness training for habit change to anxiety. And lo and behold, we created this anxiety, unwinding anxiety app and got really strong results, you know, 57% reduction in anxiety in anxious physicians, 67% reduction in people with generalized anxiety disorder.
Dr. Judd, I'm wondering how I can reap the benefits of meditation without actually practicing it. I love this. I'm a meditator, but only, you know, meditation for me is going on a mountain bike ride. Mm-hmm. It's not sitting still, silent. So tell me how I can reap the benefits without doing it.
Yes. And so I'm with you there. I love mountain biking. And that was one of the first places that I found that I could really get into, you know, to tip into flow, you know, which is like this totally selfless experience. I even wrote about that in my first book. But the idea here is that meditation, I think of it as Venn diagrams. Meditation is a small circle within a larger circle of awareness, or you can think of mindfulness as awareness plus curiosity, plus that attitude of curiosity. So we don't have to be sitting down on a cushion cross-legged with candles, you know, burning to pay attention, to be aware and to be curious about what's happening. In any moment, in fact, we can get curious about what's happening in our direct experience.
Oh, just the benefits of curiosity and keeping curiosity alive as we grow into adulthood are there's myriad benefits. It's really great. I'm wondering, because you have this great TED talk on how to break a bad habit. I'm wondering about those physiological addictions like smoking cigarettes, alcohol addiction, versus the addiction that we have to worry and fear. What is the balance between those? How relatively difficult is one over the other to rid ourselves of?
Yeah, I would say each of these is individual. So certainly there are physical dependencies, for example, with cigarettes and with alcohol. And with alcohol in particular, if somebody's really physically dependent, it can be life-threatening if they just quit cold turkey. So they really do need to carefully detox, ideally under medical supervision. So there are these physical characteristics of physical dependence with chemicals, yet what spans the whole gamut is the whole spectrum is the psychological dependence. So people are psychologically, like my patients who slowly cut down on cigarettes to reduce, you know, they get to below where there's the physical dependence, and then there's just psychological dependence. Folks who have detox, they still have this psychological dependence and these strong cravings. for alcohol, even when their body has kind of changed its receptor profile and all of that stuff. So we all have psychological addictions. And that's the piece that regardless of physical substance or mental like worry that anybody can work with.
That's amazing that our brains have such a stronger connection than a physical. And with the outdoors and going back to mountain biking, we see a lot of previous drug users and abusers who go into endurance sports because of that endorphin release. And there's a physical and mental correlation. You want to talk a little bit about that? It sounds like a bigger, better replacement.
Yeah, there are two pieces here. One is we can get addicted to exercise. And I hadn't realized that I had some of that myself in college where, you know, I get irritable when I couldn't exercise and I would plan my day around exercising and all these things. Yes, some of us can relate to this. So here, that is a, we can, if we substitute exercise, for example, for another addiction, we can just become addicted to that. And then if we get injured, for example, or we have overuse, you know, injuries, then we fall right back into the pattern and say, okay, what now? And we start looking for something else. So here, I think we can turn to the positive qualities of exercise, but also at the same time, learn how our minds work and see that we're not overdoing it, finding it for the joy of exercising rather than looking for the rush or the way to distract ourselves from these other things. So again, it comes back really to understanding how our own minds work and then saying, oh, this is a bigger, better offer, but it's not a better offer if I'm just doing it to avoid or to get that rush.
That's so interesting. Dr. Judson Brewer, wow. I've seen so many recent books on anxiety, but you really teach us not just about what it is, but how to get out of it. And that is, it's so relevant. And we're so happy that you could join us on The Mountain Life.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Take care.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.